Hey everybody, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net and I want to welcome you to today's webinar on performance management, managing individuals to drive for the best results. Your employees are the parts to a race car. And if any of those parts aren't performing up to par, then the performance of the entire car suffers. Companies need to monitor and maximize the performance of their employees, not only to help themselves, but also to show their employees that they care. So today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we've got a panel of experts here to share their insights into how companies can create cultures of excellence within their organization. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source will help you take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts are proven to be among the most effective methods of learning improvement and knowledge retention. The focused iteration training capabilities of knowledge source will have a major impact on employee understanding and application of the skills required to collect more money and the laws and related policies and procedures that staff members must be compliant with. You can learn more about them by visiting them online at peakrevenuelearning.com. And I am quickly going to drop a link in the chat that you can use to visit their website. And we're going to hear from Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning a little later in our program. Let me introduce you now to our panelists. Mindy Tumley is the owner of Solidarity, a collection agency in Washington State. She's also the former president of the Washington Collectors Association. I have to update that, sorry. Mindy's passionate about the power of small business. She also believes we can navigate change and in the revolutionary idea that it's possible to get along with people who are different than us. Bettina Hagee has spent over 20 years of her career focusing on process and development, training, and quality assurance, including all aspects of associate coaching and development. Her performance management strategy is built around the principle that associates are adult participants in the workforce and can be self-directed if performance targets are transparent, properly educated, and incentivized. Bettina is currently the head of quality assurance at Credit Control Corporation in Newport News, providing direction and coaching primarily in first-party medical collections. Hal Trapp serves as the Associate Vice President of Organizational Initiatives for RSI, a leading provider of revenue cycle services to the hospital and large physician practice market. Hal's work focuses on process improvement and organizational development. Prior to joining RSI, he was the Director of Revenue Cycle for BCA Financial Services. He serves on the Healthcare Committee for ACA International. His favorite mantra, commit to design thinking and then disrupt the status quo. Our format for today will be the panel discussion format that you've all come to know and love. This, of course, means that questions from those of you watching us live are encouraged. If you've got a question, drop it in the chat or hit the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel and send it in that way. The Q&A option also features an anonymous button if you wish to submit questions or comments anonymously. That's going to be your best way. All right, let's jump into our conversation. So the first thing I want to talk about, when I do a lot of these types of training and professional development webinars, we tend to focus almost exclusively on collectors. And I'm just curious, should collection operations be checking the performance of every employee, or should they just be mostly focusing on the collectors? Mindy, I'll pick on you to go first, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think sometimes that is actually a really large source of conflict in collection agencies. And when you consider your whole team as just that, a team, it can be a revolutionary change. I really believe that when we engage everybody, we get the best performance. And so, yeah, I think absolutely you better be watching and engaged in training and supporting everyone, which is, you know, we can talk about this more, but that's why my office isn't commission-based. Because I don't want that division between my collection team and the rest of my team. Everybody is based on a pay scale that, and they're all the goals are team goals because we're all a part of this. But yeah, absolutely. You track everybody.
Mike, you started this by comparing collectors to race cars. And immediately my first thought there was, this is awesome. I love race cars. But my second thought was that you don't do that alone, right? You can't race by yourself. You've got a pit crew behind you. You've got all your parts suppliers and so on. And I think if you start thinking about things in those terms that, you know, all of those other departments are there to support your business operation. To Mindy's point, you start kind of working as a team and as a single unit. You start solving problems together instead of, you know, kind of looking at let me check on you to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to do. It's, hey, let's all, you know, share some information back and forth and, you know, hold each other accountable to making a better product or a better race car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for us, it's more or less any working group that is required to produce at a certain level or quota, and where you can document what their work product is, can always benefit from the performance management in order to set the pace, because they're all contributing to the bottom line and the billable opportunity. And if you take the support teams that are associated with agents, say as a QA department, they should have targets themselves. And when you're tracking their productivity and their output, or if you've got individuals whose jobs are to handle disputes, anything that is a billable opportunity for us within the organization should be an opportunity for that performance management, because it's measurable, and then we can drive that optimum performance.
I love the idea of team goals and accountability and all of that, even though I kind of work by myself. My team is, you know, probably, the, you know, I'll just say my team's the best. But how do you still kind of have to, individuals still need or are still going to want to improve. They're still going to want to develop. They're still going to want to try and strive for and achieve more. So how do you sort of include that inside the team goal, if that makes sense? It's great that the team is all working somewhere, but the individuals all probably have their own skills or their own things that they want to work on as well. How do you kind of fit that in to what, you know, what you're doing with the team?
So I'm small, so, you know, my footprint's different. Like, I do monthly meetings with everybody, and we set individual goals, and we have a second, not a commission, but there's some incentives. You know, sometimes it's a contest or a game or something that we're linking to those metrics. But there's also no reason that even in a commission office that you can't have that gamification or a bonus structure tied to performance. And, you know, for me, it's not about like punishment and reward. It's about figuring out motivation. And I know myself, when I track and reward myself, I work harder. And so, you know, whether I'm tracking the fact that I don't like to do performance management, but I know I need to. And so I reward myself when I get all my monthly meetings done. And sometimes it's just a coffee, but anytime we can figure out what our triggers are and reward them, then I think you've got benefit. But there's ways to do it. You do two commission structures, one for individuals and one for team. There's a lot of ways to do it, but I think generally getting off the idea that the only people who should be tracked or the only people who should be motivated through a monetary award or the collection team, that's not a healthy long-term structure.
Yeah, and our approach is like using that race car analogy again. Individuals striving for their own independent and personal performance and reaching the peak of that, the more agents that you have or collectors or working groups that are individually striving towards, whether it's the incentive bonus that gives them the additional monies in their pockets on top of the group bonus if we meet our collections targets, these are all, the more people are trying to do the very, very best and try to get that gold medal and be in the top three, the higher the team begins to perform. And we've seen that several times over a period of time where we're drawing the total performance upwards as the individuals who easily present as the strongest and create that leadership. It creates competition. It creates incentive. It, whether it's pride that motivates you or it's the dollars that are motivating you, that's always individual. But as they, Our team, they fight amongst one another, and those who have managed to reach the top levels don't want to be unseated. And so we are constantly finding new levels of success because our metrics are easily measurable. They're very visible to our agents, and they know in essence that they're competing against themselves and trying to get that money.
Yeah, and I think it's such an interesting comparison because I think our two cultures are very different, but they're doing the same thing, which is treating people like adults. I love that you said that. And it's finding ways to motivate everybody. And so, you know, I don't have that same thing going on, but I think everybody, you know, when you walk into a space, are these people being tracked and measured, you know, as a weapon or as a punishment, yeah. or is they being tracked and measured as an ability to help them succeed? And those are drastically different philosophies. And so I think if there's managers in the audience, you have to ask yourself that hard question. Am I tracking this because it's fun to go out? You know, I get some sort of like sick pleasure in going out and saying to people, hey, you're behind, because that isn't actually helpful. And all of us have been there. All of us. I've had days where I'm like, ha, I found something. And it's like, no, that's not what this is about. But we have to have those honest conversations about why am I tracking what I'm tracking and what am I going to do with that result? And if it's tied to, you know, punishment, then that's not ideal. Now, if it's tied to correction and to, you know, compliance and learning and getting things right, then absolutely that's useful. But if it's being tracked and not used at all, why are you wasting your time, right? And if it's being tracked for liability reasons, then you have somebody repeating, then you need to let them go. Like, there's all these factors to think about, but backing up and thinking about why am I tracking this and what am I going to do with the result, I think is a helpful question.
And we've tried to kind of focus on the notion that they're essentially functioning in their own little business unit, right? And so our metrics are essentially business reporting for themselves. And educating them how the various components that we use, the metrics that we're choosing to track, how that in fact measures their contribution to the bottom line, but it also opens up opportunities like AHT, controlling your AHT, opens up opportunities for greater collections because you have more access to accounts. And so making that connection that those metrics are not there essentially to measure punitively, but are an ability for them to embrace their own performance, be self-directed, because they understand the economic factors that contribute to our overall success as a corporation. And so we've kind of brought them into that visibility so that they become participating members in the economic environment that they're working in, rather than just performers of tasks.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to get caught in the mindset, right? As, you know, somebody did big numbers, so we put big number on wall, right? And you guys both bring up really good points about, you know, yes, it's important to track these things from an awareness standpoint, but you know, if we can use that to recognize people, but then kind of move that back to the team, you know, Mindy's team did a great job. Mindy had this particular achievement in there, but the team succeeded. You know, here's the overall results and here's our, you know, top three or what have you. You kind of blend those together. You can recognize both at the same time. And, you know, nobody wants to be on a losing team. Even really, really good players that get tons of recognition don't want to be on a losing team. So that's where you start to develop some of those folks that are, you know, maybe not even your top performers, but they're holding a whole team together. They help support everybody else on the team. They help answer questions, you know, getting new people nice and integrated. Everybody in that team has value. And if you start recognizing all of those little contributions and find meaningful ways to acknowledge, you know, this person did something really awesome on this team, you build that connection for your staff and people start working together.
We publicize daily for our frontline associates who are on the phones, just a basic collections metric, who collected what and how many calls that they accomplished. But their ranking within the group and their performance metrics are kept private. In that sense, we don't say Susie was number one and she continues to be number one. If they exchange that information amongst themselves, that's their own prerogative. But for us, it's basically the agent understands, because they're presented those metrics twice a month, they understand their performance against the set expectation, which is what we need to continue to function successfully as a business. They understand their performance over time because they see it month over month, and they understand their performance in general because we do rank them out in comparison to their peers, although they don't know who is above them or who is below them, except what they can extrapolate from the daily production stats that we put out. So because we're a predominantly work from home environment, we've avoided posting names because that can sometimes make the weaker performance disincentivize them. And I've even seen really competent performers begin to overcompensate for it because they want to keep those money and start to get hyper efficient on AHT as an example and impact the customer experience. So we try to keep that a little bit separate so that it's not so much this public free for all with where they're shaming and naming. It's way more understanding your position in the machine, in the race car and on the race car team, so that you can personalize your approach to your job performance. That was a lot for one question, eh, Mike?
That was awesome. It's great. I love the information that's been shared so far. Looking forward to diving in more. But first, before we get any further into the conversation, I wanted to hit the pause button briefly and invite Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, the sponsor of today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris.
Thank you, Mike. And hello, everyone. I'm Chris Rickman. I'm the president of Peak Revenue Learning. Have you ever heard of the forgetting curve? If you haven't, you've almost certainly seen the results in your organization. Forgetting curve describes the rapid, dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after training that virtually all of your people experience, whether they are new or experienced team members. And the results are disturbing. Mistakes, complaints, missed revenue, dissatisfaction, rework, increased turnover. And this leads to increased regulatory, financial, contractual, and reputational risk. The good news is you can do something about it with spaced, repetitive micro-learning. Our application Knowledge Source will turn the forgetting curve into deeper learning, empower your people with knowledge, enable them to thrive. Knowledge Source will increase revenue, decrease risk, increase accountability, help lower the cost of training, and decrease turnover. To find out more about us, visit peakrevenuelearning.com or give me a call, 803-521-0031. We're here to help. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Chris. Appreciate your sponsorship. Again, peakrevenuelearning.com, the website address and Chris's phone number are in the chat. Encourage everybody to reach out. So, all right, and listening to everything that's been said so far, I'm changing the race car analogy because I don't think it works anymore. Now I'm going with Power Rangers because I think, you know, everyone's an individual, but then everybody kind of comes together to form a team. So that's what I'm going with, unless somebody could come up with something better. But in that, Bettina, you actually opened a door to something I wanted to talk about, and that is this whole dynamic of, you know, employees who are working from home or working remotely and those who are in the office. I'm sure that, you know, has the opportunity to create tension, conflict, or, you know, different measures of how you're measuring productivity or performance. So, would love to kind of have some time, you know, have the three of you discuss how companies should take into account, you know, where somebody is working and sort of, you know, whether or not everyone needs to be held to the same standard or not.
Yeah, let me go first because I have strong opinions about that. The practical reality, we're an organization that has predominantly worked from home. We do have some employees who choose to be in a hybrid environment. Practical reality is I hired you for a price point. I hired you to deliver a certain amount of productivity for me in order to keep us running our business the way that we want. Our staffing is based on it. All sorts of elements are based around the headcount that we choose to function with. And so each of my agents, whether they're working from home or they're working in the office, has to meet the same productivity expectations. The difference is that you don't have the opportunity for that day-to-day interaction that's standard in a contact center environment where you've got a supervisor, a team lead, or the QA who can intervene because they're hearing the conversation. We have tools to do that, but we have to really choose to take that opportunity as part of our work process. So this is where these metrics measurements, this performance management, and for us, the performance management is a very, very specific program. It's a presentation to our agents twice a month, once they're tenured agents, of specific performance metrics, which create a portrait for us of the agent's performance. And when they're in a work from home environment, it helps the supervisors, it helps us when we look at it and we can say, you can see in the statistics that an agent has potentially got some knowledge gaps because their hold time gets really high and the percentage of calls they put on hold, or their transfer rate, or they have a high HT and then they transfer their calls. Those are indicative. They create an image and a portrait for us that can direct that coaching. And so the agents need to be aware, but we as a corporation need to be directed by that content as well in order that we can target our coaching in the right places. And work from home, because we don't we're missing that dynamic. It's a really excellent way to drive the conversations and have the supervisors aware of where their next conversation needs to happen, both positive and negative.
Yeah, I totally agree that the outcomes should be very much the same for remote employees versus on-site. And Bettina, we're in a very similar environment in that most of our employees are remote and we've got some that work from the office. But just like the Power Rangers, right, you had the Black Ranger, the Red Ranger, yellow, pink, and blue. You also had the Green Ranger who sometimes came in from off-site, even though he wasn't normally with the group. He was still on the team, and yeah. He was still there to fight Rita, and I can't remember the other one, so you're going to have to give me a minute to think of that. How am I doing, Mike?
You're doing awesome.
Thanks. But you've got employees everywhere, and you know they have different needs, I think is the point that you really need to focus on there. So you know, your on-site folks, you can kind of assess a little bit more differently because you can observe them. You can physically see them. You can walk by their workspace. Your remote employees, you have to create that sort of environment. So if you don't have some sort of regular contact and all they get is, okay, it's performance review time, then you know maybe that interaction isn't as positive. Starts to have a little bit of a negative impact to their performance. That's why tools like Knowledge Source are really great because you can have some regular hit cadence with them for the informational pieces. And then your interactions with them can be a little bit more personal and you can start building actually an employee relationship and develop them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing I would add is I think we have the tendency sometimes in small agencies or even in big agencies where everybody's in the office to get lazy about some of the metrics because we think, oh, they are right there. I can hear them. I'll know if there's a problem. And that is that's not great. You still need to be doing your not assuming that just because you're in the same space that you actually know what's going on. Like you got to look at your numbers wherever your people are.
Yeah, I had a boss when I first started in the industry. And, you know, sometimes we'd have these AHT spikes. And at that time, the way the billing was, AHT was hugely important for our ability to handle call volume. And he would come out of his office and he would say, AHT's climbed 30 seconds. You need to get it back down. And then it was kind of like, well, I finally said, well, how would you go about doing it? Because it's exactly the same 150 people sitting out here today as was yesterday. If there's a 30-second spike in AHT, it might be diagnostic of the call volume and the nature of the call volume, because the agent didn't wake up this morning and decide, well, I'm going to talk slower. Like right. it was the same cohort every day. And it was just kind of like, so apart from saying talk faster, if you don't even understand the component parts of AHT, right? Like if you say to an agent, it's kind of like the coaching analogy. If you have a swim coach who says, you know, if you swam faster, you'd win more races. It's like, that's not coaching. For a swimming coach, as an example, where's the problem? Is it off the block? Is it in your stroke? Is it in your breathing? Is it in your kick? Is it in your turns at the wall? Right. And if you don't understand those component parts, even coaching AHT for an individual, it's just like, are they talking too much because they over-explain or they have navigation problems in the system? Or is it in their ACW? Or is it in their hold? Like, which piece do you need to focus on? Unless you pick that apart and understand their relationship with one another, you sometimes end up saying things and directing things even when you're all on site that is not necessarily able to drive the performance change that you're looking for.
Yeah, and Bettina, I think we have to be honest that sometimes the performance change isn't in the seat. It's not the person. It's maybe a tech delay or you know, maybe it's the portfolio that they're working that day. I have this one client who their client name is super long. And they're inside another facility. And so every time you identify the client, it takes longer. And so that portfolio, it just does. It takes longer. There's more too. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes frontline people get really frustrated when their boss assumes that a change in performance is the fault of the frontline worker, because this is not. I learned this lesson the hard way. You know, 20 years ago, I was managing a team and this one person was really slow and I could not figure out why, you know, and I thought it was them. And I was like, here, sit, let me sit in your seat and let me try. And I was immediately aware that her wireless mouse needed new batteries and that was not her fault. And so, but I learned that lesson that back up a tiny bit. There may be something going on that isn't about that person's performance, and to assume it is not good-heartedness to your team.
Well, And that's, again, so if you can present to the agent this broad picture of their performance, help them understand why the metrics were chosen, what it is that they're measuring, when you see a change. So I have an agent we just had a conversation with last week. All of a sudden, her extended wrap time, she's on a fairly complicated, heavily customer service position for one of our clients, and her extended wrap time started to get really big. And it was impacting her page productive, which was going to impact a bonus opportunity. Experienced, tenured agent, very dedicated to her job. And so we sat with her and looked at what she was doing and were able to give her some really constructive performance tips. But it's the conversation started because I presented her her mid-month statistics and said, hey, what's going on? Compared to the average of your team, you're significantly longer. Let's start looking at it. And in the end, she came back to us and she said, thank you guys really very, very much. Because this is a woman who cares very much about doing her job effectively and efficiently. And we've seen an instantaneous change. She got into some habits. She got into worrying about, there was conscientiousness driving that number. And so we were able to give her coaching tips. But if we didn't have the data, we wouldn't have been able to see it.
Yes.
And if she didn't have an incentive to improve, it could have gone on much, much longer.
We have a question that came in from the audience, so I'm going to I'll ask it, but also use it as an opportunity to remind everybody. If you've got a question for the panel, drop it in the chat or hit the Q&A tab on the control panel and send it in. The question that came in was, how does performance management impact your goal setting with your teams?
You want me to go first?
My first question would be, is that related to goals for the individual or for the team as a whole? For the team as a whole, not very much. If somebody's underperforming, then really it's a team effort. Everybody kind of needs to do their part, and that, you know, sometimes that means that you carry a little bit of somebody else's weight. That's, you know, that's the beauty of being on a team, is when you're in a slump, somebody else isn't. At the individual level, I think it's, Mindy and Bettina did a great job kind of walking through that in the prior question, but it's about really understanding, you know, what's causing the deficiency in the first place, and then setting some realistic expectations. You know, if you have an employee that's meeting half of their performance standard, well, there's a really good chance that next month they're not going to meet 100% of it, right? So, you know, we look at that and say, okay, well, how do we appropriately stair step somebody up so that, you know, if they're doing the things that we ask them to do, are they going to get, you know, where we want them to be? But can we step that along? So it's 50 to 70 to 90 to 100 maybe, instead of just hit 100, because we know that's not realistic. And all that's going to do is leave an employee frustrated and exhausted, and very unhappy.
Mm-hmm. So when we started with this program, we set performance targets for the collective group that were based on our business needs, and that were helping us drive our bottom line. So the kind of efficiencies we needed in order to be able to meet our collections targets or meet our billable opportunities. And so I would suggest, if you're starting this thing, you need to ask yourself what it takes for the corporation or the division that you're working for to make money. And then you set performance standards based on that. And I mean, the internet's a great place to look to, you know, like, what's the standard paid and productive expectation? 85%. Pretty much across the board. Maybe there's some flexibility. And then as we started to change behaviors, we've moved metrics out of importance and into importance as our overall baseline performance improved. And there are some that we still present to agents, but don't actively measure as part of this bonus opportunity, because it's become a non-issue. So as an example, after call work was a heavy drag on our productivity. We created a lot of focus on it. We made it part of the incentive process within the bonusing structure, and we used our tools that were available in our telephony system, and eventually that problem is gone. Our AHT was higher than we needed it to be. Eventually that problem was gone, and we've been able to take, we started out at a nice, comfortable, big, fat number, and we're slowly pressing it down and setting those reasonable goals. But I would say the first thing you have to do is ask, what does it take for your business to be fiscally successful? And that drives some of the performance expectations right then and there.
Yeah. You know, the only thing I would add is I have a book review. And it, Mike knows, you get me on here, you get a book. And it's called Profit First. And it's exactly what you're talking about. I think you start with the need and work backwards. And then with any individual, you start with where you are and you look for gradual improvement. But Profit First is a great read that talks about that, that you figure out what do you need to be profitable, not what you need to be break even. That's nobody's goal. What do you need to be profitable? And then you back up and then you back up.
Mindy, we have a question. Who wrote that book?
You know, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm sure Mike, yep, Mike just put the link
in.
He always does. Yeah, there you go.
I think there might have been a couple of books named Profit First. So I grabbed the first one. I hope that's the right one. But if it's not, then let me know and I'm happy to go.
Okay, yeah, I'll look it up while we're.
Another question that came in is, how do you bridge the conversation about quantity versus quality when you are counseling agents with long handle time? They are conscientious about taking all the time needed to handle that patient.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah.
I think that's one of those situations that if you're not informed as the business leader, you can really shove your foot very deep in your mouth with that one, because you know, you can get into the whole, well, yeah, it's important to, you know, have quality, but you just need to do it faster. And to Bettina's earlier point, that doesn't help. No one's ever learned to do anything better by somebody saying, get better. That's, you know, the first thing I say in those moments is, okay, cool, let's sit together through a few calls in real time. You've heard my other panelists here mention that exact situation. And I think that becomes even more important in a remote environment. You know, do some Zoom side-by-sides or Teams or whatever you use, but sit and watch somebody work. What are they doing? There's a good chance that if they're taking, you know, a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes longer than everybody else around them, there's something that they're doing differently. So oftentimes what you find is there's a, you know, systematic shortcut that you can teach them, or you know, maybe they're just hammering home one point too many times and don't realize that they've said the same things multiple times. But you're not going to know that unless you're actually there and meaningfully involved in the process. If you're just taking this, you know, 10,000 foot view of the whole thing and saying, well, your stats kind of suck, you should do better than that, you're going to get that argument 100% of the time.
I think it depends too, whether you're driving your business from a billables opportunity and you've got headcount numbers and a client saying to you, you know, I need you to hit this many calls and the call volume's coming in that way, or you've got it on a collection space. I was always a long talker. I'm sure you're not surprised. But I also had a great first call resolution stats. And so there are trade-offs too. If you've got an agent who's a long talker in the collections environment and the collections numbers are fantastic, I'm not sure I'm going to mess with it too much.
Yeah. For me, there's a couple of things there that I try, and it all comes down to training. One is that I try to do a lot of training about what are the ones that I'm never going to mind you talking a long time on, or that I'm going to mind you, paying close attention to, you know. Then the reverse, what are the ones I want you off immediately, right? So we do entrapment training because I don't want you to talk on those ones. I want you to hang up as quickly as possible, you know, that kind of thing. And so get digging into the, what are the outliers, so that we know, you know, on this side, I want these to be really short, on these, I'm going to be okay with long. And then the rest of them, the second thing that I try to remind people is, okay, what is your job, right? You're supposed to collect money compliantly and respectfully. And then some of what I see people get caught up in are the things that aren't your job. You know, just as an example, one of our hospitals, we help people get linked up with the charity application, right? But there's no money in that. And so the job is to quickly provide the information because there's no money on the other end. So yes, you still need to do that task. But so part of it is, again, back to your data, is to talking to people. What are the repeated questions that you're getting from consumers that are taking you time, you know, doing in your call audits, and then finding solutions for people? Because there are faster ways to resolve some of those. On my website, we've got a link to a bunch of different consumer resources, and I've got it all, you know, all disclaimered up. But I tell people, if you get into a call with somebody who's really hurting and you want to do the compassionate thing, get them this link as quickly as possible and get off the phone because there's no money. And so trying to figure out those outliers and then answers to the problems in the middle can get your counts down.
We, you know, I'd like to kind of dig a little bit more into sort of the subjective versus the objective measurements when it comes to, you know, sort of looking at performance, because I think there are some aspects of what people do that just, you know, are subjective and aren't that quantifiable versus some that are. how do you kind of incorporate those subjective measures into an overall review or assessment of an employee's performance?
So I think performance management is the intentional process of bringing agents to a standard that's connected then to corporate and profitability goals. And so the performance management around metrics and KPIs is highly objective, right? If everybody knows what the goals are and the goals have been set reasonably, and you understand your position within that hierarchy of people meeting or exceeding, and you understand your performance linearly over time, you can see good months and bad months or good weeks and bad weeks. Those are very subjective assessments and agents become comfortable being measured by them. Objective. The subjective part, again, is this day-to-day intervention that we have when an agent pulls up an account that's complicated or an agent pulls up an account and wants to slightly bend the rules for a good reason. Then there's that opportunity for that coaching, which is, it can be subjective. It's just like, well, you could have handled the call this way, or you could have handled the call that way. That's at the individual level, and it's basically anecdote. And there's valuable performance coaching that happens there. But I want to make a big distinction between that daily interaction, which refines our work processes, and the statistical management, which is the bigger picture. Like every agent can handle a 120-minute call every week. It disappears in their AHT over the process of the month, right? And right. So I think there's a big distinction between the objective management, which is primarily based on statistics, and the subjective daily coaching that can be around problematic accounts, problematic callers, where you need to provide that helping hand.
I think that's a good point. I think you, if you look at the ultimate in subjectivity being, you know, somebody's level of customer service they provide, it's highly subjective. And we can all point to a handful of behaviors, and you know, you can attempt to say, give some sort of, you know, attribute data of did it, didn't do it, right? But ultimately, you know, we've all had examples of somebody who, you know, does the behavior that you want in the worst possible way they could do it. Well, okay, did they do it? Yeah, kind of, but it's not really what you wanted, right? Mm-hmm. And to your point, Bettina, that exists on one call. You know, that may even exist on a trend, but there's some other empirical data that follows that, which is usually complaint volume. It's usually the number of hangups that they get. There's some outcome that you can point to, because it's not really the behavior, right? I mean, I think I wouldn't care how anybody spoke to anybody if nobody else cared, right? We just all move along. I care about the outcome that it ultimately has. And the outcome is that I get patient complaints, or that, you know, you get hung up on all the time and therefore don't make any money. Those are mm-hmm. the outcomes of your actions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pulling aside from the day-to-day things, and then you're right, looking at that longer term, well, what happened as a result of this, I think can be a helpful way to mitigate that.
Yeah, without statistics, you cannot get a high enough vantage point. You can't get high enough on the mountain for your supervisors or your director of operations to understand how your division is operating. And that was the most amazing thing for me when I first started in the business and came out of the seats as an agent, was that these statistics were able to paint a portrait, and you can see the problems within the statistics, and they become relevant and increasingly relevant over time. They may not be on one call or even on five calls, but over the space of a month, and in fact, we've hired supervisors by giving them blank statistics and saying, who are you going to coach first and why? And give it a variety of like high HT or low HT and high transfer rate. And this combination, this mutuality between these performance measurements, you can describe, I can give you a line of stats and you can describe the agent to me. I know you can.
Right. And that's the kind of interesting thing as we look forward in this industry, is that communication really is subjective. I mean, it is. But as we get more and more AI models and we get more and more data analysis tools, it in theory will be less subjective, because things like tone will be able to be measured. And so then you start with all those ethical questions, right? If I can have an AI bot who's handling 100% of my communications and I have everything dialed in, is there still something left, you know, that has to do with human empathy and with the communication that is subjective? I'm going to argue all day long, yes. But I can see where, as we embrace that technology, and I love it, I'm not saying we shouldn't, but that's where those ethical questions come in, because computers make more and more and more things less subjective. And where in there do we lose that relationship piece? You know, I was at a business conference not too long ago. It wasn't a questions one, it was just a general business one. And the keynote speaker was talking about all of these things, and they were talking about accounting, right? Accountants, that they, you know, that they're, the AI is going to take over and do all the accounting. And she said, but it won't really, because what really accounting is a relationship between a tax advisor and a human. And you can do tax accounting with just raw numbers. You can. That's what TurboTax is. But is that really in-depth good accounting for complicated tax? No, it's not. You need a human. And so that's where those questions come into our industry too, right? When are numbers and the statistics enough a lot of the time? And when is it not? And maybe legislative advocacy or explaining some of those numbers to other human beings, there's got to be a place for subjective. And so when I, to loop this back to your actual question, when I'm working with it, one of my collectors, you know, and I'm doing an employee review, of course we have all those numbers and that's important. But if it was only numbers, that review would just be a report that I handled them, you know, and mm-hmm. the fact that there's a human being discussing the performance, that's where that relationship and the subjective comes in. And that's where the training happens. And so you can't have only numbers or you don't get progress. That was a lot, Mike. Now what?
It was. I'm trying. It's taking me a little bit to process all, because it's great information and it's great insights. And, you know, like I'm trying to think of a scenario, like if you've ever watched one of these, you know, one of my wife's biggest pet peeves about me is I will play devil's advocate for fun, like just because. I'm trying to think of scenarios where you have a collector who has all the great, you know, on the subjective, non-quantifiable side is just amazing. And on the objective, quantifiable side is just terrible. And I can't really think of a scenario where that would necessarily be the case. But in that situation, you know, what do you do with that person? You know, if he or she has the intangibles, but doesn't maybe have, you know, the data to kind of back it up, you know, how do you know whether or not that person is doing a good job?
Yeah, promote them.
I think you're kind of, I don't think that person exists. Like,
okay.
Yeah, agents have strengths and weaknesses. You've got long talkers and great collectors. You have short talkers, not so great on the collections, but boy, they can pump out your manual dial outbound. You know, like so it's a combination of things. But an agent who's successful, I mean, our business is language, right? Like the work product that we're selling is not hammers, it's not knives, it's words, it's communication, it's dialogue. And so I think that if you have an agent who's performing predominantly statistically well, then you have an agent who's performing well. And because there's always that QA component, right? And the QA component should be able to measure that customer service interaction. Are they friendly? I mean, if they're just quick and rude, well, then the base instruction, which is to, like you said, Mindy, was, you know, collect efficiently and pleasantly. And so that's
compliantly, yep.
Compliantly, right. Compliantly and yep. Pleasantly, right? So I can't actually come up with a scenario where somebody, I can see somebody having great performance statistics who actually is kind of rude and aggressive on the phone, but their QA is going to be terrible. And so then they don't. And I don't see a scenario where an agent has really great performance on the phone and all of their stats are bad.
Yeah, because I generally would agree with that. I think, you know, if you're looking at the wrong data sets, see how you could arrive at that conclusion, or not enough, you know, information that can see how you could find an example. Like, you know, we often think about those collectors that are, you know, really, really nice, but they don't make any money, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have great customer service, but they can't collect anything. Okay, well,
yeah,
there's an outcome for that. We can measure
yep.
that, right? The inverse is true. The one that generates all the complaints, well, if, you know, you're not looking, if your quality scores don't reflect something about their awful tone and the fact that they put your company at risk by their behavior, then your tool is wrong. You need a better tool, you know? So I think it is, to that end, probably exceedingly difficult to find an example where somebody lives inside that gray area. But if your tools aren't doing the job that you want, if you have an employee who's succeeding by all of your metrics and there's something that bothers you that's not just your personal opinion, look at your metrics. You know, what are you using to evaluate?
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Because your compliance and your customer service should be in those numbers, right? And that's what CFPB says. It shouldn't be only your bottom line dollars you brought in. That's not the only measurable. And so that would be, you know, one of the things for all the people on the call is, what are you measuring and why, and what are you going to do with it?
Right.
And for us to towards your sort of argument, Mike, about substandard performance, you need to be able to measure substandard performance and decide whether you can improve it or whether you want to remove it. Because again, like Mindy said, we're in the business of staying in business and hopefully generating profits so we can continue to grow. The question then is there a limit to performance? And you've got superstars within the group. And if you incentivize it properly, again, all, you know, the rising tide rises all ships. And at the same time, for me, I've got agents in a couple of circumstances who have ranked out just sort of in the lower edges of our incentive bonus program, or even slightly just under, but met all of their statistics. And I'm able to send them a monthly email that says, I'm really proud of you. You met all of the performance expectations. Now, I'll coach you on individual stats and tell you how big the gap is between yourself and the guy above you who is making that extra money. And then you can decide whether or not you are satisfied with your own level of performance because you met my standards. You're meeting the corporate standards. And we think you're wonderful, and I think you're a great agent. Now, if you want to go into competition with your peers, then I coach very specifically. Okay, if you can shave 30 seconds off your AHT by dropping your after-call work by 15 seconds, and you can improve your productivity because this is the performance of the people you're after, then if they want to make that particular effort and they want to modify their performance, then that helps me, that helps them. My goal always is to coach to the corporate standard. Everything above that is gravy.
Yeah. Well, because it's sustainable. Because I also think that sometimes if your goals are either too high or you expect people to outperform all the time, you risk burnout. And then, or unhealthy competition where people, I liked the quote in here about cutting corners on your stats. If you get too competitive and too pushy that it always has to be really high, then you come up with other unhealthy things where people are cutting corners or they're stealing payments or, you know, some of those things that are happening. And so I think sometimes getting to profitable and sustainable is better business model than getting to 100%. Oh, we have to have 110 all the time. No, we don't. We have to have enough all the time. And that's sustainable. And then you build, you know, good, all the things, good work, life balance, you keep employees, you know, it's sustainable.
Yeah. And I had a really
too hard,
high,
too long, they're leaving.
Yes. I had a really high performing agent, and I actually coached her to slow down because I was worried about exactly that. I was worried about a performance decline over time because she was going to burn herself out. And so I educated, again, without telling her who her direct competition was, I said, look, you can slow down just a little bit and still be the number one performer.
Right.
Here's the gap. Here are the places. Don't spank yourself silly that you in the end are setting a pace that's totally unsustainable, because her well-being is exceptionally important to me over the long term.
Right.
Having an employee burn out in this business, attrition, training, all those associated costs, I need her to be healthy for a long time and to enjoy her job.
That's right.
And teach her how to stay in the performance category she wants to stay in, have access to that bonus opportunity, but not kill herself in the process. That doesn't help me.
Well, and that's what goes back to the subjective a little bit, right? Where you got to look at your HR manual and see, do I have enough flex in here to not be the worst boss on the planet? And if not, I need to build some breathing room in for my people because I want them to stay a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's the part we have to remember, is they're not bots, they're humans.
So there's a related question in the chat on that. About the question is it really advantageous to do daily coaching, or should it be done, let's say, monthly or bi-monthly with data? Sometimes it's overcoaching and feels like micromanaging. I think my answer there would be, if you're coaching every single person every day, I wonder what you're not doing. That sounds like a lot of time spent talking to people that you're probably not, you probably are just doing a lot of talking at some point, you know. I think very few people should require an everyday coaching. Your brand new employees who are still establishing some level of habit, I think certainly require some more touches and more iteration because they haven't built any habits yet. But, you know, generally speaking, you check in on your people, but that doesn't mean you have to coach them every day.
Yeah.
And then change management, right? If you're rolling out a brand new Reg S talk off or something, obviously that's going to take some more time.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we start already in training. We have reasonable expectations, and then our trainees spend 90 days. They see their statistics every Monday. They have a conversation with their trainer for like a 10-10 for about 20 minutes every week, talking about asking them how it's going. Like, it's not just feedback to them, it's their feedback to us. And then our agents then see their performance statistics twice a month, month to date and month end. And the month end allows them to know if they're bonusing or not. And then, of course, we have those exceptions where we have individuals that we are currently actively performance managing into a higher level of performance. They may see their statistics every day. Mm-hmm. They may have conversations with us every day, or at minimum once a week, because we're trying to create that change or change moment. And either they're going to improve and come to standard, or we're going to start to have some of those more difficult conversations associated with it. So I think you have to kind of, I think the encouraging part for your supervisors is to have a consistent methodology for feedback that's visible, like agents can see it and review it at their leisure. That it's not entirely verbal, that the agents understand what's being measured, and that you're creating that time in the working environment, at least at some particular, if it's connected to an incentive, that the agent has time to self-correct. Again, it's the self-directed performance. It's not that you did this wrong. It's, this is what we're measuring, and this is how you can decide what you want to do differently.
Yeah, I think you have a great point there. But you know, a specific example might be an employee who's generating some complaints. Well, they're going to go back after you have that initial coaching session, right? And they're going to make a phone call. My vote would be the next coaching is after that phone call. If they're doing some particularly risky behavior, you know, the coaching is immediate. And then maybe, you know, I'm casually listening along for a couple phone calls, and then we're back. So it's very situational, but I think I like to view coaching as, you know, are we doing initial development? Then, you know, pretty highly regular and consistent is really important. If we're just sort of managing and staying the course, I don't really need to coach you very often. I just need to, you know, coach your mood along and make sure that you know what's happening as things change. And then from there, it's an escalating process. If you're starting to experience issues or problems, then the frequency comes up a little bit, right? So instead of maybe a once a month, it's once every 2 weeks, and then it's once every week where we're not making any progress. And then it's, okay, you know, every couple of days, we're going to be looking at this until we start to get somewhere, you know, whether that's the employee not working there anymore, or you know, the problem starts to resolve, and then you step it back out.
How often do you have people get down that close and reverse and stay? Like, never. I asked myself that question.
But I like to think that they would.
Yeah,
I've had improvements for like 4, 5, 6 month periods, and as soon as the pressure comes off, goes back down in. But I think we have to make a very big verbal distinction between performance management, of which coaching is an aspect, right? And so performance management, your high level, really, you tell them their stats. If they happen to get a complaint, you coach that individually. So I see coaching as independent interactions based on a specific set of circumstances, a specific event, or even coaching that's driven by your performance management program that then says, you're going to get a lot of my attention for a short period of time, and this is why. Mm-hmm. But performance management is the program that you put into place to be able to measure agents to drive the coaching that then happens with a frequency that depends on the circumstances.
Right. And that'd be separate from like a compliance management program that you're having on a whole different level. Yeah. And lots of times those are linked, but are correlated.
Well, we've just about reached the top of the hour, which means we're running out of time. So unfortunately, we'll have to wrap things up, but we'll end this webinar the way we end them all here at AccountsRecovery.net, and that's asking each of our panelists to share what they think the one most important takeaway is today. So, you know, for each of you, if you want the audience to walk away with one thing, what do you want that one thing to be? Hal, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think you know, it's a point that came up midway through our conversation, but if your all the stats that you're tracking and all the data that you're looking at isn't providing the outcomes that you want, you need to step back and look at those. You know, if employees are succeeding in a way that's unlike what you want them to be doing, you're measuring them the wrong way.
Well said. Thank you. Mindy?
Yeah, for me, it's that same thing. Step back and look at the what you're tracking and why, but then most importantly, what are you planning to do with that? If it's about motivation or punishment, I think you got to look at your own intent to before you can build a really good program.
Excellent. Thank you. Bettina?
Figure out what you want to measure. Document what you're going to measure. Share it individually, specifically, and then incentivize the performance that you're looking for.
Excellent. Well, Bettina, Hal, Mindy, I want to thank each of you for being here today. A really great discussion on an important area of collection operations. And I think everyone's walking away with a much better understanding and some really good ideas. So thanks to the three of you. Chris, I want to thank you and the team at Peak Revenue Learning one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. Again, peakrevenuelearning.com is the website. Encourage everybody to check it out. To those of you who watched and listened today, thank you for being here. Always appreciate your support, your engagement. We're back in an hour. We've got another webinar at 3 o'clock Eastern today on the topic of phone numbers and caller ID best practices. I put a link in the chat a little while ago to click on to register, or you can go to the events calendar at accountsrecovery.net to sign up. If you can't make that one, we're back tomorrow at 1 o'clock with a webinar on how to monetize your data, which I think is going to be a really, really interesting discussion. So if you haven't signed up for that yet, I encourage you to do so. So hopefully we'll see you back for one of those. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here, and I look forward to seeing everybody soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Everybody.